We are walking through this world half asleep. Discipline, discipline. On the surface, it's a very simple idea.
Do something no one else in your industry is doing.
Work is something you do, not a place that you go. What do you think about that?
We've all seen products that are difficult to use or of questionable value.
But on the sort of geeky side, I mean, I love having the latest and greatest device.
I have to admit, though, I miss the good old days when it was really hard to use computers.
You're not supposed to say that.
Hi there, and welcome to BI Radio. I'm Ken Seeley. On the show today, stories of innovation and transformation, and leadership in the extreme. Contributing producer Delaney Turner examines the resurgence of innovation on the corporate imagination. And our talented technology soup roundtable looks at how consumer technologies are transforming corporate IT. But first up, a look at extreme leadership. Our own Kelsey Howarth talks to the man who coined the phrase extreme leadership, author and Cognos Forum keynote speaker, Steve Farber. We'll have that interview right after this.
See how, share how, learn how. All at Cognos Forum, our annual customer conference. See how to expand your Cognos solutions, share success stories with other Cognos customers, and learn to maximize your Cognos investment. Plus, hear from Steve Farber on how to become an extreme leader. Cognos Forum comes early this year from May 14th to 17th in Orlando, Florida. Early bird registration till March 23rd. Save $500 off the regular price. For more information, visit cognos.com/cognosforum.
You're listening to BI Radio, brought to you by Cognos, the next level of performance. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Howarth. What does it mean to be an extreme leader? Well, Steve Farber has the answer. Steve is an author and consultant who's conducted hundreds of engagements for companies such as Sun, Wells Fargo, Eddie Bauer, and Intel. In 2004, his book, The Radical Leap, won Fast Company Magazine's Reader's Choice Award. Here, he and I discuss his new book, The Radical Edge. What do you feel are the essential qualities of an effective leader? What differentiates an extreme leader from the rest?
Well, first of all, extreme leadership is just my way of saying the real deal. The real leader. Because, you know, I think what's happened is we've gotten to the point where leadership has become another buzzword, and we use it too loosely. What happens is, people get into, in a corporate situation, for example, they get into positions of authority, they become, quote-unquote, the boss, and the assumption is that now that I'm a boss, I'm also a leader. And that's not necessarily true. Leadership doesn't automatically come with the territory. It's more important the higher up you go, but it doesn't automatically come with the territory. So I think we've gotten to the point where we wear the word leader as a label or a title without giving a lot of significant thought to what the implications really are and what the personal stakes really are. So extreme leadership is just my way of saying somebody who is really acting as a leader beyond their position or their title.
Now, you've recently written a book called The Radical Edge.
Right.
Could you tell us a little bit about that and how one achieves the radical edge?
Yeah, The Radical Edge, the subtitle to the book is really also the description of what the radical edge means, in my estimation. It's the subtitle is Stoke Your Business, Amp Your Life, and Change the World. And my argument is that we should strive to do all three of those things simultaneously. In other words, it's about stoking the fires of your business, being as successful as you could possibly be in the context of your work. It's about amplifying personal joy and meaning, and as I mentioned earlier, changing your piece of the world for the better all at the same time. These are not mutually exclusive ideas. I've never seen the universal law written anywhere that says they are. We don't have to sacrifice who we are in order to survive, let alone thrive at work. And work, being successful at work, is not at the it's not contrary with having a positive influence on the world. So it's doing all three of those things simultaneously, which I know is a modest promise, otherwise known as a tall order. But I don't think it's beyond our capabilities as human beings to do that. And certainly there's no downside in striving for that I can think of.
One of the ideas I found particularly intriguing was that you ask people to create a wake-up pad to help them find the symbols behind the constant information they receive. How does a wake-up pad work? Can you explain that more fully?
Sure. A wake-up pad, or WUP for short, is really, you know, on the surface, it's a very simple idea. If I want to, you know, to make it as simplistic as possible, all I'm suggesting that people do is carry a notebook. But it's the real, I think, elegance in that is what you do with the notebook. So the underlying principle here is that we are, many of us, most of us, I would say, walking through this world half asleep and are unaware of what's going on in the environment around us. And if we can wake up and pay attention, not only does it make our experience as human beings more fulfilling, but it gives us ideas. I mean, there are great ideas all around us. And so the wake-up pad is just a methodology to help people do exactly that, wake up. So you're starting to collect your observations. When you're hearing something, you hear something on the radio, you overhear somebody speaking in the a conversation, a couple of people standing behind you in line at Starbucks, and it strikes you as interesting, an interesting turn of a phrase or some observation that you hear from somebody else, you write it down. Write it down, write it down, write it down. That's the key. That's the whole discipline in all this, because if you don't write it down, you're gonna forget about it. So every so often, now that you have all these notes of your observations, you sit down and you think about it, and you ask yourself, well, what does this mean? Are there implications here? Where does this take you? Does it inspire a certain line of thinking? So you're having a conversation now. When you start to jot down some notes in your response to the things that you've observed, you're having a conversation between yourself and the world. You're having a conversation between yourself and yourself, and just seeing where that takes you. And then the real sweet spot in all of this is every so often, now that you've observed and you've pondered about it, you get together with other people, another person or a group of other people that are doing the same sort of a thing, and you talk about it. And you start to compare notes. Here's what I'm seeing. What are you seeing? Here's what that makes me think. What do you think? And then eventually what happens as a result of those conversations is some new idea pops out. This is really, you know, this is where, you know, innovation as everybody's opportunity really comes into play. This is where it becomes a reality, because I guarantee you that eventually, if you do this sort of a thing, some new idea as to, you know, how you're approaching your work, how you're approaching your family, your philosophy of life, and it can be any number of things, some new idea is going to emerge.
At Cognos, we help organizations take the masses of data that they collect and create context around it, turn it into scorecards, dashboards, plans, and more. A central theme in your book seems to be that people, individuals, don't take the required time to really ponder and analyze the information around them. It seems a very similar principle at play. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, anything, you know, any methodology for gathering intelligence and helping us make sense of the world and how it relates to the way that we work and our business strategy and all that, that's all... it's all towards the same end. So it's a very, very valuable thing, and I think it's a very important thing. The other side of that, though, is the personal side. Is that, you know, technology is only helpful insofar as people use the technology. And I think it's not just a matter of collecting and making sense out of the data. I think the personal practice in all this is cultivating in ourselves a desire to bring in, consciously bring in more "quote unquote" data, to be more awake and receptive to our experience as people, and what we can learn from one another and the environment around us. So if we can cultivate that desire in individuals, then they're much more likely to use technology like what Cognos offers. They're much more likely to carry around, for example, the little notebook we were just talking about. I mean, mine is the, you know, is very, my approach is very low tech. but that's not at the, you know, it's not at odds with high tech. I mean, it's a really an amazing age that we live in, and I think, you know, one of the things that we have to be careful about is that we get so much. I mean, we think that we get too much data,
mm-hmm.
and the ability, you know, through the technology like what Cognos offers to help make sense of that data is I think you know, a real gift for most people.
To read more of my interview with Steve, please visit cognos.com/newsletter. To learn more about Steve Farber and other exciting speakers, please visit the Sweeney Agency at thesweeneyagency.com. Now more BI Radio in just a moment.
You're listening to BI Radio. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Want to build on your Cognos skills? Start with Cognos Training. Right now we're offering a 10% discount on classroom courses at all 22 locations across North America. To register, call 1-800-426-4667 and dial extension 2263 or email us at ed_registration@cognos.com and refer to code JANDISC. That's JANDISC. Offer ends February 28th. Valid in North America only. Offer to be used at time of registration. Discount cannot be applied to courses with registration already finalized or combined with any other discount offer.
Welcome back to BI Radio. I'm Ken Seeley. Here's a question. What happens when the technology from outside the workplace makes its way inside? In today's bowl of technology soup, our panelists talk about the influence of consumer technologies on corporate IT and the way they're changing how we work.
Hi, I'm Don Campbell, Vice President of Platform Strategy and Technology.
I'm Stefan Ju, Technical Architect.
And I'm Anastasia Valentine, Product Manager.
Gartner has coined the term the consumerization of IT. To me, that really means the experience that users have when they're outside of the workplace and how technology is being used out there. When they come to work the next day, they actually expect to be able to use those technologies inside their office environment. What do you think about that?
I'm surprised they let people outside of the workplace. Oh, sorry.
You're not supposed to say that. Sorry.
I think it's a growing trend. I think it's something that more technology is being accessible to more people on a constant basis. And when you come into work, you get these canned applications that are very restrictive, that don't let you do the same types of access points, the same gestures, the same kind of experience that you'd have when you're at home on the internet. And I think that's a really driving force behind the change of IT.
Oh, it's true. Everyone knows how to use the search box compared to 5-10 years ago. Even my mother and my mother-in-law both know how to search the web. So they go into work now and they're looking at these old antiquated systems which have been set up 5-10 years ago, and it's completely different. So they're wondering why they can't get the same experience at work that they get at home.
So we're starting to see some changes in that area. The ability to access information, like you said, on the internet through a Google search environment or a little search box inside your application is just expected nowadays. And we're now finally starting to see some of that come into a performance management kind of context where people can look up information by just typing in simple keywords and expecting to get valid and valuable results.
Yeah, it's certainly good for users in general. I think they've just raised the bar in terms of usability, and they've also really been trained a lot better now. But just by using the computer at home, because it's so pervasive now, you know, I would say that the users of today are a lot more sophisticated in using the computer, you know, just from that experience. So it really raises the bar for us to be able to produce software that is as easy to use for them in the office as it is for them at home.
Well, the training is a big part of it, I think. When we would produce for many years software that required specialized training, and the cost of training your users is very expensive to an organization. Now, if you can take advantage of the training that they get at home, just sitting at their personal computer, they can reduce that training cost a lot because they really are being trained to do something simple like a search in a simple text box.
I have to admit, though, I miss the good old days when it was really hard to use computers. I used to get a lot of respect, you know. Now you can just move a mouse and click a few buttons
now
and
anyone
can use it.
It's almost unfair.
I want to go back to the days of hexadecimal coding and assembly and forget the mouse. I want to be able to move iron pedals that you play like a piano, and, you know, they should have giant spikes coming out of the keyboard, so it's really hard to use. I had respect back then.
That would be the geekization of IT, not the consumerization of IT, though.
I guess so.
But we see that coming in a lot of different ways. I think search is really a dominant one, but it's not just the way people use applications. I think there's other elements to it, other hardware devices and appliances and different ways that people just deal with technology outside of the business world that's starting to come into the business world.
Yeah, we certainly see a lot of that in the mobile space, which is something that Anastasia and I have been working a lot with. Most of the smartphones and PDAs are not purchased by the IT department. They're brought in by prosumers who purchase these devices and use them at home, and then they bring them into the workplace, and then they wonder, how can I get my email on this application?
Yeah. How come I can't log into my internet sites? How can't I do all these things?
Exactly. So that seems to be driving a lot of demand for that sort of functionality. But it's interesting, because I think we're starting to realize that the person who is at work in the office is the same person who's at home. They don't become someone else. So we're just sort of extending that persona to sort of cover all our applications.
And I think at the same time, it doesn't feel as intrusive if you have this little device wherever you are and you're able to answer a question or you're able to look up information really quickly, as if you have to plug in your laptop and be really visibly working. You can sneak out your device and start doing email or something.
Well, except then you have these meetings where everyone pulls out their BlackBerry and they're all emailing and not paying attention to the meeting.
But it's very true that work is something you do, not a place that you go. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, there's a rapidly growing trend for individuals to be outside of the work environment and taking that work environment, you know, outside of the building with them, whether it's, executives at the airport or on a plane or something, or it's people just working outside of the office or working from home. And those kinds of environments, if they can be mobile and distributed away from the office building, they allow for productivity all day long rather than just in very restricted intervals.
And it's not just, traditionally we've been saying, it's just the executives with these mobile devices. And now it's really expanding into anyone who's out of the office, so any mobile worker. And it's not only just the mobile office worker. It could be a mobile field technician. It could be a baggage handler was another example that we had. But all these people with their devices, whether they're on the job, wherever that may be, or at home, or, you know, in transit, it just makes that level of productivity so much higher than we ever have had before.
Yeah. So what's causing all this? Is it the sophistication of the devices? Are they just reached a point now where they are capable enough to do the kinds of things we need to get done in an office kind of context, so they can do it on these small devices, or is it a social change that's cultural change that's happening?
Oh, it's all of those together.
I think it's a combination. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the uptake of these smartphones is a lot higher now than ever was before, to the point where they're outselling computer systems. You know, there are way more smartphone users out there today than there are PC purchasers, you know, on an annual basis. So that's certainly driving it, and that's definitely from the consumer side as well.
But on the sort of geeky side, I mean, I love having the latest and greatest device, and it's when everybody else has the same one, you know, you got to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily when the new technology comes out, but still, I mean, there's that cool factor of being able to have this great device that does this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
So not only, you know, you can do your work on it, but you can also, you know, you can chat, you can even video conference on some of the new ones that are coming out of Europe. So, I mean, there's so many advancements that we can take advantage of right now.
Chat's another good example, right? That's something that started out as a strictly consumer thing, so that I can IM my buddy, you know, and it was something I would do at home. And now there's lots of companies and people trying to figure out what makes sense from a collaborative point of view inside the enterprise. So you see companies providing software that allow, you know, groups within an enterprise to be able to collaborate with each other. And that's more of a reality now than ever before, especially given how all these teams are distributed all over the place. It's very much a worldwide corporate environment as well.
Yeah, I think distribution is one thing, and that's really important. But I think also multitasking, so the ability to be on a phone and then, you know, I am the person that you're on the phone saying, what do you think about this idea? And then bring that aspect into the conversation as well.
Especially you. You're always moving.
Double, triple tasking, multitasking.
More people and more applications and more technology and more devices and all that stuff growing and changing all the time. I think it's a really important trend, and we'll keep following it for sure.
Sounds like fun.
Sweet.
Hi, I'm David Axton, president of the Sonex Group and author of the book Best Practices in Planning and Performance Management. Over the next few months, I will be speaking at a Cognos Finance Forum in a city near you. Please join me as I share how the traditional barriers to high performance are being swept away by a new class of finance professional and technology-enabled proven practices. I hope to see you there.
Taking you to the next level of performance. This is Radio Cognos. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Hi, I'm Delaney Turner, editor of Cognos Performance Perspectives, the Cognos newsletter. Today I'm in the studio with Kelly Allen, our star contributor to each and every issue. And we started off this year with a special issue on innovation, a topic that, after years of flat budgets and cost cutting, seems to have recaptured the executive imagination. Kelly contributed two fantastic articles to this issue, and she's here with me now to talk about them. Kelly, you've looked across a lot of commentators for this for these two articles. You've looked at the Harvard Business Review, Gartner, IBM, Accenture. All of these people and all these organizations are promoting the value of innovation. Why do you think that is?
Well, it seems in tight economic times, businesses are more focused on cost cutting. But with growing confidence in the economy, there's more room for strategic investment and business growth, and we seem to be seeing this sort of upswing happening now. And we're seeing this need for innovation across the board in terms of new products or services, as well as business model improvement. So companies are putting money into both sides of the business. It's about gaining greater efficiency, working smarter, and opening up the business to new, hopefully more profitable ideas. As the pundits say, innovation is an investment in the future, provides new products and services, it energizes people and organizations, and it's really an essential capability in achieving high performance, according to Accenture anyway.
So you looked at a lot of different ways that companies can innovate. What I found really interesting was the ways that companies in mature industries can drive new growth. Can you tell us about one example there?
Yeah, in the research I learned that you don't have to be an aggressive startup or pour tons of money into venture capital projects. Every organization can innovate. Look at Yoplait and Cemex, which I covered in the story. They both improve profits by reinventing their products and services in new ways. As another example, IBM looked at innovation in the banking industry. Things like better branch services, product integration and loyalty programs can improve customer profitability and create more shareholder value. Interestingly, IBM also suggested banks need to look outside the institution for new ideas, especially partnering opportunities. And this could be something like linking together healthcare service providers, insurers, and banks. By the way, collaboration was a theme that kept popping up in my research. This allows you to share the innovation workload. Mm-hmm. And one IBM CEO study on innovation suggested that companies should collaborate on a massive geography-defying scale to open up a world of possibilities. And a recent Harvard Business School article talked about Procter & Gamble's new approach to research and development. What the company did was get rid of its cost-heavy invented-ourselves model. And instead, it developed a new business model it calls Connect and Develop, which uses internal and external networks of collaborators to develop innovative projects. And this more open approach, the company sees it as the dominant innovation model of the 21st century. So it's obviously very important.
Interesting. So looking beyond the organization, it's not essentially having a bunch of geniuses in the basement cooking up new ideas. It's looking outside and having a perspective that's a lot wider than that.
Exactly, yeah. It takes some of the cost away, and also it does open up more opportunity for ideas. And
right, so So besides collaboration, what's required for companies to innovate? I mean, new ideas pop up all the time, but only a few ever take hold and are really profitable. When you were researching the stories, what did you find?
Well, you have to create the conditions to make innovation happen. So at one end, you have to have the development and commercialization capabilities, of course, to take the ideas through to the end. But really what's most important is you have to start with good ideas. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of information about that. And Harvard Business School says you need to brainstorm and listen to voices inside and outside the company. Gartner suggests organizations should seek ideas in every part of their business and beyond. Customers, competitors, mm-hmm. vendor mergers, basically anything and anywhere you can find them. You also need to let everybody play a part. The guy in shipping who can see a better way of doing something, or someone working in the storefront who's a frontline observer of consumer behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Customers can give you great ideas too. Just thinking as consumers, we've all seen products that are difficult to use or of questionable value. Wouldn't it be great to have a real feedback mechanism for suggestions mm-hmm. where the ideas were actually considered by the company? And you could also take a different path from your competitors, which is what Harrah's did. Instead of building bigger and better casinos, which is the more traditional approach, mm-hmm. Harrah's decided to focus on customers and customer profitability. And Harvard Business Review would call this a market-busting move, mm-hmm. where you do something no one else in your industry is doing.
Right.
I've got an audio clip I'd like to play. This is with Clay Selden, who's Director of Customer Marketing at Harrah's. Listen to what he has to say about their approach.
Traditionally in the casino industry, the way to grow revenues has been to build newer, bigger, better casinos. And Harrah's decided not to go into that kind of very capital intensive game. Instead, we decided to focus on customers and focus on things that it's almost like a very retail oriented method where you always hear same store sales growth. Well, through our Total Rewards program, of which the Cognos tools are a pivotal part with the reporting capabilities, and the analysis capabilities, they're able to, we've done sustained, I believe it's over 3 years of same-store sales growth. Recently, last year, it was a 14% same-store sales growth.
So basically at Harrah's, they were essentially treating casinos with a retail model. Instead of building much bigger, expensive casinos, they went after what they called same-store sales growth to get, you know, increase the profitability of each individual customer. And they have a tremendous loyalty program because of that.
Exactly. It's been hugely successful. And they just use that customer information, that customer insight, to improve the customer experience. And as you say, I mean, they have a huge number of loyal customers and a very successful business. So
right. It's really, to me, when I'm looking across these stories, it's really the role of information and the free flow of information. And that really is the fuel for these ideas. Is that something you found as well?
Yeah, I think you really need to have an information-rich environment in order mm-hmm. for these kinds of ideas to take hold and then bubble up and turn into profitable products or services. So mm-hmm. so it's definitely key to have some kind of information management tools,
right?
Just to help you capture that and.
Right.
And go from there.
Right. And as well, another theme that I see is that innovation is really coming from everywhere. It's from the CIO or the CEO on down, making it a corporate mandate almost. But as well, frontline people who can contribute or find new ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you really need both directions, mm-hmm. you know, because everybody has perspective. Everyone has something to contribute in. And I think the more successful companies, it seems, they're able to take from both sides.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much, Kelly, for coming in and giving us your perspective on that. To read more about the special issue on innovation and other articles about business intelligence and performance management, you can visit Cognos Performance Perspectives online at www.cognos.com/newsletter.
Well, that's today's show. I'd like to thank our guests, Steve Farber, Kelly Allen, and our technology soup panel of Don Campbell, Stefan Ju, and Anastasia Valentine, as well as our contributors, Kelsey Howarth and Delaney Turner. I'd also like to acknowledge our producer, Derek Schrader, for composing all the original music here on BI Radio and for making us sound so good. And finally, a big BI Radio thanks to James McQuaid, Dave McDuff, John Blackmore, and Jane Baird for paving the way for BI Radio. To download today's program, check us out at radiocognos.com. I'm Ken Seeley. We'll see you in 6 weeks.